So this week, the Business Lounge is a little bit different, okay? Now, that's because, you know, we've been putting up with Steve and Andy, and we've all been getting quite deep into things. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to give the lads a break this week, let them have the week off, right? There's another good reason, and that's because I managed to get an in-depth interview with one of the best knife-making companies in the USA. I managed to talk to the founder, and I mean, picture this, right? Picture this. You're a Navy SEAL. You come out of service. You decide to be a stuntman. You go and do stuntman on the Transformer films and stuff like that. Then you become a military advisor in Hollywood on other films like Avatar and stuff. And life just still hasn't given you enough. So you decide to start making knives. Andrew Alabito, founder of the Half Face Blades business. Now, that is a big company now in the USA. They're based over on the San Diego area of America. That's California side. So he's living the dream. I'm telling you now, he's living the dream. And I thought to myself, I wonder if I can get these people to talk to me, because I have kind of spent a fair bit with them and they've always been very good with me on the phone. Their shipping and everything else is fantastic. You always get what you pay for. It really is a really good company. And the business model and the marketing style that they do is fascinating. And I thought if I could get them on, I could run that business on the Business Lounge. But look, this guy is very busy. He's he's got a very colourful history. And, you know, would he take the time out? Well, he would. And that's what makes a fantastic businessman, isn't it? Is that they do give you the time of day. They do take the time out. And we had a great 30 minutes chat about Half-Faced Blaze, about his past, about all sorts of different things. He's a really good guy. Half-FacedBlaze.com is the company if you want to go and check them out. But look, let's take a listen of what we actually talked about and how the business formed and how we got into it all. This is kind of how it went. We're listening to 90.4 FM. This is Ride Time Radio. We're going out on the south coast of Tenerife. And, of course, we're going out across the world. And we're reaching right out to San Diego, California today as we speak to the founder of Half-Faced Blaze, and that is Andrew Alabito. Now, I hope I've got that right, Andy. Is that Italian influence in there?
Yeah, Sicilian. My dad was half Sicilian and my grandfather was full Sicilian.
So look, my name's Adam. I'm the owner of Easy Rider and Ride Time Radio. We're a station for bikers. We go out across Europe and the UK. And, well, whoever else really wants to listen. And I've spent most of my savings on your knives over the last 6 months. And, in fact, I'm just about to remortgage my property as we start looking at more drops. My wife hates you, right? My kids think I've gone crazy. And I need some help, Andy, to shed some light on the story. Help me explain the connection between man and knife.
All right. You ask away and I'll answer. I mean, at some point you just resell those knives for more and put your kids through college. So
that's actually what's getting me through this, right? Is that I am saying that these are valuable and I can resell them. And there is that. I mean, I've seen other knife makers and they ban you for life if you even think about doing that. But you're quite easy with that. You know, you don't have issues with that.
Most of the time, you know, when we notice people specifically buying just to flip them, then that's where I have an issue, because a lot of these people, they'll use the Nike shoe bots on our site and that's kind of a battle right there. Or they'll you know, get the knife and we'll see it on like eBay within a day before we've even shipped it for $3,000 or $4,000, and it was, you know, $800 knife. And that's when we are like, hey, you know, we have an issue with this person, we can ban them or whatever, however we want to deal with it. But in general, most of the people, they buy, sell and trade. So a lot of them are out to find their favorite ones they want to hold on to. And by buying others and hooking people up and selling a few and trading some, they're able to build their own, you know, the knives they want to hang on to for a long time.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's a fun thing for people to do.
I've always been a lover of knives, weapons, you know, anything that's kind of sharp and pointy. You know, I think it's just a man thing. You know, I've been a biker for 35 years. I've been involved in different sections of life. I've known some good guys from the SAS. You've got a bit of history as well with Special Forces. Well, a big history there. We won't delve too much into that. But for me, it's about style and story. And you have a fascinating story behind you as a person. You've got the childhood family losses. I've saw that in the videos and stuff with what happened with the family. You're a decorated Navy SEAL. You're even a Hollywood stuntman. In fact, my boys were probably watching your stunts in Transformers, you know. So why, with all of that going on, why did you then decide that you wanted to get into the knife making business?
Well, after I got out of the SEAL, started young, growing up, I had a real outdoors family, two older brothers, older sister, my mom and dad. We lived up in the woods in Northern California, traveled a bit, you know, a lot of backpacking and fishing. And my family is real outdoors. My dad was going to Alaska a lot. He had taken my older brothers when they were 13, 11, and they died in an airplane crash. up there. Fast forward, I always just stayed really outdoors kid. You know what I mean? My two older brothers were big into Native American culture, wilderness survival. And that was always something that was a part of my life growing up. And in I think sixth, seventh grade timeframe, my mom's cousin, Ethan, bought me a Navy SEAL workout book. And I was like, wow, this looks awesome. They're doing the ropes course and, you know, showing people skydiving. And you're like, wow, this is badass. You know what I mean? Like, what do these guys do, right? So then, you know, fast forward a little more, in high school, I started really looking into it, you know, freshman, sophomore year of high school. And I was like, wow, you can find some stuff on the internet. I'd never met a Navy SEAL. I looked into the different special forces. I liked that. I found that the Navy SEALs were on the different coasts, and I'm a big waterman and fisherman. And I was like, I don't want to be stuck in Georgia in the Army or the middle of America, you know? So I decided that's what I wanted to do. You know, what's more fun than skydiving into a country or, you know, helicoptering into a mission at night and killing some crappy people out there, right? Yeah. So, and it, you know, the brotherhood part of it was a big aspect. So out of high school, I joined the SEAL teams, went through training, went to my first SEAL team, went to SEAL Team 5, did two deployments, Southeast Asia and Iraq. And then third deployment, I went to a SEAL Team 1, went to Afghanistan. That was really awesome. Came back from that and ran the maritime operations for the SEAL teams and special forces and stuff for a while. I had gotten injury during that time frame, broke all my fingers almost off. And they were like, hey, you know, it's up to you. I was at, you know, 10 and a half, 11 years. You want to get out, we'll give you 100% disability. You can move on with your life, or do you want to stay in? Well, there wasn't much going on. This was right before ISIS kicked off. So I had done, you know, good deployments, good amount of time, my, you know, pretty much entire adult life from 19 to 30 years old involved in the SEAL teams. And I was like, well, I was pretty disappointed in my injury. You know, I thought maybe it would affect me or not. But I chose to get out and move on with my life. And that's really, you know, my only regret is just not being able to keep going to war with my buddies. And, you know, that's it. I love that. That's like the vacation. You do so much training when you're on the plane going to war with your friends. You're looking around and being like, oh, these bad dudes, they're screwed. I got the best group of killers on earth. You know what I mean? So you're stoked on that. But outside of that, I'm happy I've gotten out. I started a business, a brewery and distillery, had some pretty bad business partners, took advantage, took a lot of the money, stepped away from that. During that time frame, I had started working on Transformers 3. With an old frogman from Vietnam who was up in LA with Michael Bay doing military advising. So I started working on that, met Michael. From there, I'd met another stunt guy, started working on some stuff with him, and then did Transformers 4, Transformers 5, 13 hours. Kind of during that time frame too, I guess this is, you know, 2014-ish. I like when I was up in LA, it's just LA is not a place that I want to live or try to go hustle to get enough work. You know what I mean? And luckily I built some really good friendships up there with guys in the industry, but my heart and soul is really out in the mountains and hunting and fishing and a little less hectic of a city life. I'm not big in the city, you know? So I kind of pulled away from that. Although I went up and of course I went to Malta and I did 13 hours with Michael. I met another guy. So he's a stunt director, second unit director for Avatar. And I did a couple shows with him. And when Avatar came along in 2017, he asked me if I want to do stunts on it. And then I ran into Jim Cameron. He was like, hey, do you want to stay on and be a military advisor? So I was like, yeah, absolutely. So during that time frame, I had already started the end of 2014, kind of toward the end where I was doing some work up in LA and I didn't want to. I was like, I was hungover one day and I was like, man, I just want to like be able to go hunting and fishing and support that. And I wanted to support my buddies in the SEAL teams. By then, you know, ISIS was getting big and my guys were over there killing those dudes. And I was like, man, I was just thinking about my brothers and we had made knives and I was a little kid with them, like an old benchtop grinder. And I was like, man, I know how to use a knife. I've used a knife since I was a kid. I know the design that works for specific jobs from the outdoor industry, wilderness, you know, industry to combatives knives that are used in obviously combat and killing people. And I was like, you know, that's something that I would enjoy doing. So I just started under the awning in my backyard and started making knives in 2014. And, you know, the first knives I only did 50. Yeah. And then 2017 to 2000, whatever, when Avatar came out, I worked with Jim doing all the military advising for that. But
okay. And history, it's interesting now. I mean, that's a massive history. And it's interesting you say, you know, because you've got one of your knives, haven't you, which I think most of the military are carrying now in the US. Is it the combat fillet or the?
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there's guys, we put in orders all the time. The guys that graduate from SEAL training, generally, they put a whole order in for every single one of those guys. Different SEAL teams put in order, Army Special Forces, CAG, SEAL Team 6, they all put in orders for different, it's all different knives. You know, it's just whatever they want. Tomahawks, knives, they're all over, they're all out there.
Well,
Secret Service, I've had some pictures of Secret Service guys, not them, but holding their knife they carry on them, one I made. FBI hostage rescue team carries a lot of the blades.
Did you expect, I mean, it's kind of gone crazy, hasn't it? You founded the company in 2014. You've built it up from there. I want to talk to you a little bit more about how you do the sales and that, because it's fascinating.
Yeah.
But like, it has gone like exploded, hasn't it? You know, I mean, you've got so much going on. You know, it's amazing how far it's gone in just those 10 years. Do you think COVID and the pandemic also accelerated the business a lot?
We kind of, you know, it grew fast. Second, third. You know, second year, it's grown every year, right? It almost doubled for 3 years straight. Almost doubled it through COVID. It doubled toward the end of COVID. I guess the last year that it really doubled was 2022, which was awesome. You know, COVID probably helped. I don't know. People were out shopping more, maybe collecting cool things.
Do you feel that people wanted to like kind of arm themselves more? You know, they're looking for like concealed weapons. They feel there's a lot more going on the street. I mean, I certainly feel like that now, you know.
Yeah, with you know, what goes wrong in a country with riots and, you know, chances of war or disaster, those are things that people are like, okay, what kind of tools do I need? Obviously, you know, you want, you know, not just a personal tool on you for fighting, but things that are capable of prying. So pry bars, you know, things you can get out of a car, get in a car.
Things that aren't going to snap, you know. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, there's another side of this which I wanted to touch on as well, and that's kind of all of this junk that's come out of China. I think it's opened doors for businesses like yours, because people seem to be going back to saying, you know what, I've spent, say, you know, so much money on junk from AliExpress or from all these websites that are offering absolute junk. When you get it, it doesn't work. It lasts a couple of weeks. It snaps. It breaks. But you're offering something that is, I mean, it's a knife for life, or it's something that a tool that you're going to have forever. It's not going to break on you. It's not going to let you down. And that must be quite a good feeling to be supplying your buddies and that in the SEALs and that with that sort of capability.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, the one thing's cool is like during COVID, right? A lot of people that didn't have their jobs or whatever started making things. So it was kind of a maker's time frame, right? So not just knives, but anybody else who decided, hey, I'm not doing shit right now. I want to do something that I've always been maybe passionate about. And there's a lot of makers out there who kind of grew small business during COVID, which is good. And American made, right? Which is awesome. And a lot of people, they want to support veterans, right? They want to buy American made. They'll pay more for it. It's better steel. It's better quality. So for us, you know, I wanted something that really at the end of the day would work well in whatever job you're doing. But also I can make it as simple as custom as and beautiful or sinister as the person wanting to buy it, like as personal or custom, like I said.
Yeah.
So that's where it kind of started. And no one taught me. I just know from the end user what's going to work and what will work in that line of work. I cook a lot. I have good buddies that are chefs. So that was something I wanted to get into, the culinary side of it too. And I was like, well, if I'm making wilderness knives, outdoor knives, skinny knives, hunting knives, and combatives knives, I might as well get into the culinary side too. And that's been really rad.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I've got one of the kind of, I don't know the name. Well, I do know the name, but I can't pronounce it. So the kind of, you know, Japanese kind of cooking knife, which is fantastic.
Nikiri.
Yeah, that's I got that over the Christmas period. Fantastic knife, fantastic handle on it,
and
they're really nice to work with. Let's talk about craftsmanship and design a bit here, and also customer service, because you are not short of that either, you know. And I will give Kelsey a big shout out here, because I'm a pain in the ass, I know that, to get anything too, because of where we live, right? But he's never let me down. He never said no. He never said we can't do it anymore. He always worked with me. Yeah. It's she, been...
Some people won't. They don't talk to her.
Oh, it's a she. Ah, right. Yeah. Got you. Oh.
I've seen an EY for guys, but you've only talked to her via email. So
yeah,
no
yeah,
one
that's
knows.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, she's been brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
She is. You know. She is. You know who she was? She was Michael Bay's executive assistant.
Right. Okay.
And he's a very tough man to work for. Very demanding, high strung, and she was the best he's ever had. And she ended up quitting. Michael, I had met her and I'd done a few movies, and that's when I had met her through a few movies with them, and we became close, and she decided she wanted to get out of that and come down and help grow and run this business. So
well,
she's
definitely
absolutely
a massive asset. Yeah, massive asset.
Huge.
Now look,
when I look
at the kind of marketing stuff that you've got going on, I don't see forging of blades, but I do hear more talking about Magna Cut steel. And what's the difference and what's more superior?
Well, no one can beat super steel. So the metallurgy of being able to combine certain powder steels together to create a structured steel that has a real high corrosion resistance. It's a tough steel with really good edge retention. That's the best steels out there. So you have American Crucible Steel that makes some of the best steels, S35, S45. They make MagnaCut. There's a few. There's Bowler Steel from overseas, M390. Those are really good steels. And it kind of depends on what you are going to use it for. There's 3V, 4V, Nitro, S90V. For dive knives, you know, a nitro steel is really good. Something that's extremely high corrosion resistance that you might lose some edge retention on would be better for a dive knife. Whereas MagnaCut is a real high corrosion resistance, good edge retention. The problem is you have to heat treat it really high. And if it's a really thin knife, you may, if you hack with it at all, you may start chipping the edge. You know what I mean? So I've used MagnaCut on a lot of the stuff. I tend to go to S45, which is a high corrosion resistance and a good edge retention, but it's a strong, you don't have to heat treat it so high, so you can hack with it and use it pretty gnarly and you're not going to chip the edge.
Okay.
You know, Damascus steel, there's all different Damascus steels, and it really depends on how somebody starts or what steel they start the Damascus with, kind of the superiority of it. I don't think it's, you know, some guys who forge may argue, but I don't think it's ever going to beat the superiority of being able to, you know, scientifically put powders together to create a steel. Although there's some really good Damascus out there. We have about 2 to 3 people, companies we use to do Damascus or Sanmai. Right now, we're using a company called Baker Forge and Tool, and they make really, really incredible Damascus and Sanmai. Different, you guys look them up, like some of the stuff with the copper lines through brass.
I think the problem with like Damascus at the moment is it's become like heavily used as a kind of this must be a real knife now because it's made with Damascus steel, and there's so many copies out there, and it's very difficult as a normal person.
There's
to
a lot of bad Damascus
through that. Yeah,
there's a lot of really bad Damascus coming out of like Pakistan and places like that. They spread out and they just sell over the world. A lot of knife makers like, oh, that's really cheap, I'll get that. There's good Damascus. There's a lot of bad Damascus. You know what I mean? We try to, you know, like I said, we use a lot of Baker Forge Tool. We're starting to implement more and more because we really love it. It's really beautiful. It's obviously cost more because of the process. You know, from us, you know, just getting a plate of it is hundreds and hundreds of dollars, if not $1,000 for a plate, long before we even start our process.
Yeah. And the designs of the blades and the names, I've read up on your passion for the kind of more primitive designs from back, you know, you're talking about sort of Red Indians and all of that kind of styles.
Yeah.
The Skinner, for example, is a great example of that. You know, it's a great looking knife. It's actually one of my favorite knives that I've got. Whose creative brain is at work here when you're talking about naming knives, designing the shape of the blade, etc.?
So I still design all the knives, the shapes. I choose the thickness of steel, the type of steel, for what it's going to be used for. I have some incredible guys in the shop. I have an incredible team, and I let those guys get really creative with grips and handles, and we choose what knife they want to go on. Miles is my manager. I grew up with him, and he runs the shop when I'm not here. I mean, he pretty much runs it when I'm here. I'm not a micromanager. I let guys get really creative on that aspect, but because of my background, and I still hunt and I fish every single month, and a background in, you know, combative knives, I still design them all.
Okay, good. Let's talk about the drop, right? This is fascinating. Yep. Yeah. The amount of knives that are sold in a moment is incredible. Sometimes you don't even know what you're going to get anymore because you get into such a blind panic and you think you're never going to get that one of them again. And you kind of just end up just hitting something to make sure you got something, you know? Yeah. Is this one of the things that's made the company successful, do you think? You know, I mean, it's quite an innovating way to do it on such the scale that you do, you know?
I didn't plan it like that. You know, I never planned it like that. As back in the day, as we made them and finished them, I would just put them up for sale. Well, the first 2.5 years I had started Half-Face, I didn't even have a website. We just took orders from people who would say, hey, I want to get on a wait list. They give us their email. Hey, what do you want? We would make them knives. And I figured, you know, I really want to grow this business. I want to scale it. I want to bring guys in and veterans in, give them a job so we can do this together, so we can learn together. So I'd hired my roommate. I hired an ex-SEAL buddy of mine, and I hired Miles, my first three guys. And I was like, hey, we built a little shop in the backyard. And it was like, hey, let's take orders from people, custom orders, and then let's make whatever we want all week. And as we were finishing them, there were so many people trying to get them. We just got so much anger from people like, you're not putting enough up. What the heck? So then we're like, okay, well, how does this work? So then we're like, okay, let's work all week. Let's finish as much as we can by Friday afternoon, and let's put them all up Friday evening. You know what I mean? And then as we grew, we realized, well, we may have to work more Friday evening, or the guy who, like, originally was just us taking pictures with our cell phone of the knife, put it on the website. Well, we were like, well, we got to take more time to do that, so it can't be Friday evening. So we're like, all right, let's just get as much as we can done, and we'll just put them all for sale every Saturday. And that's what started creating that drop culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It's actually entertaining to watch, you know. You go on, even if you hold yourself back from buying anything. But it's just an amazing process. It blew my mind when I first saw it. You know, but I was casually trying to buy a knife, and I kind of clicked on one, and then I went to pay. And by the time I'd got my PayPal details in, it had gone. You know, it was like, what the heck is going on here? But it's an amazing way. It's fantastic.
It was crazy. Like in 2022 was really the gnarliest. Like we'd have, you know, we'd put 400 knives up, and it would be, you know, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They'd be gone sometimes.
Yeah.
It was the most crazy thing I've ever seen, you know? And it's like, amazing. And then of course we get a lot of hate, like, you know, it didn't stay in my cart, you know, screw you guys.
Oh,
and
I was, you must like, get a lot of
hate. I don't have that choice. Shopify doesn't allow cart holding. And I was like, it's really good it doesn't, because people would go snag 5, 6, 7, put them in their cart, and then it really would take away from those who were trying to get it. You know what I mean? So my dogs can hear.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's fine. It's a fantastic process. It really is. I mean, it's quite, you know, amusing to watch as well. Sometimes it blows my mind every Saturday when I go on the site, although I try and stay off it now, to be fair.
Right.
But let's talk
it's
about
cool,
that.
You know.
Let's talk about the handles, right? Let's go on to the handles, right? Because there's so much now, the kind of designs that you're coming out with. I mean, it's amazing the products that you're using. How long has that taken the team to kind of master the resin, you're working with bone, all of the woods? You know, that must have taken a fair while to get your head around.
You know, well, so, I think one of the biggest blessings too is like no one really taught me. So it was a lot of YouTube, looking stuff up. And it was like, well, let's find our limits. Like what can we use, what we cannot use and can't use. And let's start using stuff together. Like the first split, I really never saw a knife before that had split materials.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we were doing it where we were, you know, using 3000 PSI marine adhesive and putting the top of the handle on, cleaning it up, then putting the bottom of the handle on. Then we started thinking like, well, there's G10 liners. So we're building them on liners, being able to put them on there, clean up around the outside. And then we're like, well, we could put a third material in the middle, and then we could do little slivers of copper. And it was just, we can angle it, do top, bottom, or we can over, under. And it just is like, my mind works a certain way. And then what's cool is I have like the next guy's like, thinks of something a little different. And then what's cool is with guys with different mindsets and creativity, we can come up with so much different cool stuff. Whereas now with my shop, my new guys, once they get to a certain place, I let them start building handles just to see their creativity.
Yeah, fantastic. So you're apart from you're keeping kind of the core HFB style by making sure you're looking at the blade. And I like the way that you describe in other interviews and stuff that I've heard you with that, you know, you're working back from the end user and you're working back. So you're understanding what they actually need it for. And I think that's a great process. But you're letting the guys in the shop then really go to work, and that's obviously why there's so much fun. And I mean, you must get some really stressful periods in the shop, yeah, especially when you're getting ready for the weekend. And we're only seeing the happy moments, of course, you know, on the videos and stuff.
It's not bad. I have a pretty rad shop. We have such a good team. I don't really have any problem childs right now. Like I said, from, you know, Elliot, my first four guys, and I have such an incredible crew that, you know, they play music. Guys are on their headphones listening to music. The guys are talking, coming up and stuff. We keep guys working hard. That's the point. You know what I mean? Because we're a sales-based company, and
yeah, of course.
And I want to invest in my guys. So one of my biggest things on the business side is putting a lot of my effort forward to invest in the guys. So paying half of everyone's healthcare, getting lunches on Fridays, as long as the bathrooms and the kitchen area stays clean. You know, I plan, there's hunting and fishing trips. I try to take one or two of my guys on, you know, throughout the year.
So
they can actually, so they can use the knives they're making and understand why a knife needs to be this shape or this skinny. And then I plan, you know, big fishing trips for everybody. We do Christmas party. We do, if a good movie comes out, like I rent the theater, everybody goes there. We have a whole group of guys that like hiking and backpacking. There's a group of guys that like motorcycling. There's a group of guys that just ride Harleys. You know, and that's what they love. And we have a very, it's not clicky.
I want a job already, Andy. I want a job.
Yeah. What's awesome is I know it's good in the shop when I hear music and guys are laughing and I look back and guys are dancing and being dumb in the shop. I'm like, this is like a really good culture right now.
Yeah.
As long as guys are working,
you
know, they can be dancing in the shop and being funny and laughing. Like
if
it's dead silent and then it's anger back there, we're not going to have good output. You know what I mean? When you're depressed or upset, your creativity goes away.
100%. Now look, we keep it happy. Saturday at 8 p.m. GMT London time is when we catch a drop, right? If you're in Europe, it's at 9 p.m., right? Because there's that time zone difference there. And people, anybody, if you want to hook into a drop, that's halffaceblades.com. Go and look at it because it is amazing. But I just wanted to ask again, now going back to the statement about the customization work that you used to do. So if a customer does want a custom knife, can they still approach you as a company to have something made?
Yeah, so there's a few differences. So one is we make customs all week, a custom knife. We make as many as we can, whatever done by Friday, we put them on the website. Those are still all customs. The other separation is customer-based customs, right? So we get an email like, hey, you know, I want custom knife. I want to build it myself with you guys. You guys build it. I have the ideas of how I want it done exactly. And we, as of now, we put you on a wait list because we have about a 2-year wait list at all times. We're trying to build that team up to about 10 people. We have 5 guys, 6 guys that work specifically on customer customs. That team is just really, really good dudes who can make some really intricate stuff. So that's a hard team to build up, but that's the process right now. So yeah, people can still email and do that. But like I said, we still do customs every week. There's customs going to the website, you know, every drop and production.
Collaborations with notable chefs, outdoorsmen, experts in the field. It's all been going on over the last year. I've seen it all on Instagram. What have we got to look forward to this year?
I'm working on 2 more folders, and then I designed like 15 more smaller EDC type blades. So we've been putting them out right now, just as called prototypes. They're hard to name them all. I have so many names, and I'm like, I got 12 more right now. I'm like, you know, I'm going to call it the A, the B, the C, the D. So I got to figure out names for these guys. Right now, I'm just sprinkling in as prototypes, and then I'll come up with a name. I'll do a run of 25 limited edition numbered ones.
Okay.
So what I'd like to do is each new design, I'd like to do 25. We finish 25 all different handles, number each one. So the first 25 of every new knife outside of the few prototypes we drop is limited edition. And then we do the normal ones after that. They're still
so
custom.
You're obviously testing the marketplace to see which ones are liked by everybody and get snatched up, and then do kind of a run on that as a standard blade after the limited editions have gone out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Exactly. And some are more, you know, outdoorish, some are more tactical knives. It's just, you know, getting to have a little more versatility.
But it's a great story. The business itself has gone from strength to strength. It's great to listen to how you've actually built it up as well from virtually nothing over the last decade, building it up slowly, learning the process yourself as you've gone along as well, not kind of just employing people and putting the whole thing together. You know, it's a great story. I've got one last question for you, and I don't know if you've ever heard of the Desert Island Discs things that they used to do on radio shows years and years ago. I'm kind of going to do the same thing for you, but I'm going to do it about blades, right? So imagine you get washed up on a desert island, all right, and you can have two weapons of choice. Now, it can't be a semi-automatic rifle or anything like that, right? I know that you'd probably grab one of them. I want you to tell me, what would you pray that you got washed up on that beach with from Half Face Blades?
Probably a Crew Junior and a machete.
Yeah, they're your go-to. Yeah. They're your go-to knives.
Yeah, I mean, machete. Well, it's an island, right? A machete is going to be great for coconuts, hacking down trees, building your shelter.
Yeah.
And a smaller blade is going to be good for all your smaller type stuff you need to do, from cutting fish up to, you know, making spears. You got to have two sizes.
Yeah. Good man. Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure, Andy, right? We have some great marlin fishing in the Canaries, so if you're ever passing, awesome. You look
I've
me
heard.
Up.
I've yeah. looked it up.
So you're more than welcome, all right? You're more than welcome. Let me know and I'll organize it.
I'm heading to Panama next. I'm heading down to Panama next, spearfishing for 8 days next month. So.
Okay, next well, look. Awesome. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. Anytime.
Okay, you take care, all right? Have a great day. So there you go. That is what makes a great business model. I mean, everything is in the mix there, isn't it? It's got a great story behind it. It's got a great founder behind it, and he's built a great team, and the whole thing works really together. You can see the chemistry that's happening on some of the kind of vlog videos that they do on Instagram. You can find them on their Half Face Blades. You can find them on Facebook, Half Face Blades, and you can find them online, halffaceblades.com. It's fascinating, even if you're not interested in buying knives or stuff like that. But it is fascinating to watch the drop. And the quality of the actual stuff that they produce is amazing. It really is. Hopefully, we'll see some sales. And maybe you might, some of the hunters over here may even be interested in going and having a look at that site as well. But it really is good quality. Thank you very much to Half Face Blades. Thank you to Kelsey. She was amazing getting that set up for me. And, of course, big thank you to Andy for taking the time out. We'll be back on the Business Lounge next week. You can hear this all over again on Sunday at 4 p.m. Say your prayers, little one. Don't forget my son.